Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:23 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 11th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. And there is a lot to talk about this week because we are on the cusp, potentially, of at least a partial resolution to the trade war. We are on the cusp, potentially, of a resolution to the three-year Brexit saga that has gripped and disillusioned the UK public. And we're also at the upper side of what is effectively a 20-month range on the major Wall Street indices. And I thought I would kick off this week by looking at these long-term charts. This is a long-term log-scale chart of the S&P 500. And I've put on there the 5-year moving average, whether you want to call that a 60-month or a 200-week or 1,000-day moving average is entirely up to yourself, but it's a 5-year moving average. And we can see that during secular bull markets, it is quite normal that during periods of corrections that you get pullbacks to the region of that 5-year moving average. During the lengthy periods of time where the market goes sideways, which equate with secular bear markets, where you get valuation contraction, and hopefully rising dividend yields, then you don't see a lot of use for a long-term moving average like that, so people forget about it. But I think it's really quite relevant now, because we started to see that it was becoming relevant again all the way back in 2011. We started to see support coming through in the region of that moving average. Now, this is not the first time we've had a lengthy period of consolidation. We've had more than two already. There was two 18-month consolidations. This one has been somewhat longer. But the sequence of higher reaction lows has been sustained. Now, if we then zoom in and simply look at an arithmetic scale, well, we're presented with an environment where, by and large, all other factors being equal, the vast majority of the time the index is finding support in the region of the trend mean. There are then these occasions, which are approximately a year and a half to 2 years long, that translate into medium-term corrections. There is no secular bull market is not punctuated by medium-term corrections. And during those medium-term corrections, supply and demand come back into balance. The argument, therefore, starts to increase that this is the top rather than a top. And then people also start to worry that we're going to have a recession that could upend the entire thing. Well, the kinds of things that translate into top formation development, the kinds of things that people have historically watched for to anticipate the next recession. Well, surging oil prices is one. We don't have that. The next is where the central bank is starting to increase interest rates rapidly to try and contain inflationary pressures. Well, the Federal Reserve was certainly raising interest rates last year. That was to act as a counterbalance to the massive fiscal stimulus that had been announced. Today, they are cognizant of the fact that they raised interest rates a bit too aggressively, and now they've cut interest rates twice. They may cut interest rates again before the end of the year. Therefore, there is not really a clear sign that the central banks are in tightening mode. In fact, I think it would be more correct to say that they're willing to do anything to avoid a recession, whether that is to cut interest rates to the bone, embark on negative interest rates, for governments to engage in massive fiscal accommodation, and then for the bank to facilitate that by buying up that debt. modern monetary theory is becoming progressively more accepted as a rational way of dealing with the, inverted commas, necessity of lending assistance to the economy. Arthur Cashin's comments, I think it was yesterday, I'm posting the report in here today, where he draws the very significant parallel between what was going on in Germany in the early 1920s and the hyperinflation that was set off. There is obviously clear parallels there with the desire to create inflation to try and stimulate economic growth and the failure of the outright inflationary bias to achieve that goal, and instead they created hyperinflation. Well, I'll certainly look at some bond charts in a moment, but what is also worth considering right now is the trade war. There are long-term considerations underway here. The first is that the USA is now pretty much energy independent. And we've been predicting this for at least the last decade, but it is a reality today. The USA is now energy independent. They are a net exporter of both oil and gas. And that completely changes the arithmetic in terms of geopolitics. Because as a importer, they have a clear incentive to try and police the global supply environment. They don't want uncertainty to unhinge the price and to create spikes. But as a net supplier, they obviously have less of an interest in securing other producers' supply. They're much more interested in ensuring the security of their own exports. And that completely changes the geopolitical math. At the same time, when we think about the trade war, well, ensuring when you're a massive energy importer and that represents a significant cost, then you have an incentive to go out and try and find cheaper areas in which to manufacture, in which to do business. When you're a net energy exporter, then your lower costs of domestic energy actually create more of an incentive to do more at home. That's one of the clear reasons why there is a trade war. The other, of course, is that there was a big bet made in the late 1990s and early 2000s that China could be civilized and brought into the economic fold of democratic nations if they were granted the ability to trade with everybody. That would increase the GDP per capita. It would create this economic juggernaut, and that democracy would blossom, and then China would turn from being a geopolitical adversary to a partner. Well, the first half of all of that certainly was achieved, but rather than embrace democracy, they've gone the other way. Over the course of the last week, we've had the banning of South Park, although one has to admit that South Park intentionally set out to get banned by China. Then we had the NBA, where the CEO of the Houston Rockets made some supportive statements in favor of the Hong Kong protests, and they attempted to lock him down. That was the NBA did. The damage already been done. And but what was interesting is the game did go ahead yesterday, but this question about freedom of expression is something, and free speech is a major bone of contention. Then you have companies like Activision, where somebody on the Reddit blog simply said, "Let's make one of the characters in one of their games a beacon for Hong Kong freedom," and within the space of about 3 days, it turned into an internet meme, and a viral pledge went out. So That created a great deal of trouble for Activision, but they've been very clear in their actions. In fact, when somebody won an e-gaming competition, and there was a $10,000 prize, when at the medal giving ceremony and the prize giving ceremony, he voiced support for Hong Kong, they withdrew the $10,000 prize. So Activision is actively trying to smooth things out with China. That's where they see their growth. But what we're definitely going to see is more of this revolt. It does highlight some of the problems that China has. It increases the potential that they're willing to deal. And of course, we know that there is an election coming up. Well, it isn't simply that there's an election coming up. President Trump obviously wants to get re-elected. He wants to lend legitimacy to his presidency. He can certainly do that by winning again. Well, he has an incentive to try and deal. But the kind of deal that is agreed to will probably be partial in nature, and probably not much more than a hiatus rather than a conclusive deal. When we look at, for example, Mosaic, a fertilizer company, it is bouncing from the lower side of its base formation. It's been trending down all year. If they do remove tariffs on agricultural products, that is likely to be positive for example, soybeans or lean hogs. And soybeans was in positive territory today and coming up to the upper side of this base, or at least the range that's been underway now for a year. When we look at lean hogs, then it's also firming and holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. When we think about the continuous commodity index, it's been right in the region of the 400 level, and it was in positive territory in here today. It hasn't quite been able to push through that 400 level yet, but at least it is trading back above the trend mean. The potential for even a partial agreement, at least that removes the immediate threat of further escalation. And the disappointments that investors have experienced with the constant ebb and flow of hypish announcements via Twitter that did not lead to anything, then it hasn't been priced in that the trade war might in fact go on pause. Of course, if we do get a pause, then I think it's quite likely that we are going to see a clear break on the upside. There is a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines, and there is the potential that that is going to get recommitted. That's another point that is rather important, that you don't generally get big market tops until cash has been fully committed. And that's most particularly the case with the retail investor. Now, when we think about what is likely to occur, I think it's quite likely we are going to get a significant break on the upside. I've been rather of the opinion that we're probably going to get a bubble environment evolve from here. When we think about the longer term view, then we've had a very significant evolution in terms of the bull market over the course of the last decade. Then this has been a reasonably similar range to what we saw in 2015 and 2016. There was a lot of speculation back then that it was also the top. We've had another step higher. I think it's quite likely we're going to get an additional step higher. We are obviously going to have a recession at some stage. The quantity of debt that is outstanding is something that is going to have to be addressed eventually. And that, I think, does represent a longer term issue. Now, the S&P 500 has not closed on the upper side of its range for the day. So we are going to have to see a clear sign that a deal is going to come through. When we look at these tops stories, so we can see clearly that there is a phase one trade deal. They're not going to introduce additional tariffs next week. These are some of the things that are driving interest in the market. I do think that there is potential we're going to get the bubbly environment, that we are going to see, resolve this market on the upside. The fact that the banking sector is really quite steady is also, I think, rather important, and usually banks lead on the downside, and the US banking sector is not leading on the downside. When we look at the mid-cap sector, the Russell 2000 was in positive territory today. It is at least holding the region of the trend mean. Small caps generally represent the health of the domestic economy. They have been struggling to hold this range for most of this year. It really does need to sustain a move back above the trend mean in order to confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The transportation index is a very similar chart pattern. It does suggest that there has been a slowdown in terms of the UK, the US economy. I did mention in one of the audios earlier on this week, I spent some time down at a customs warehouse at Los Angeles Port this week. It was really very quiet. And I've been going down there twice a year for the last 4 years. I like to go and pick up Mrs. Tracy's containers myself so that I can get a perspective on what it looks like down there in the port and port activity. I'm rather glad that I've been doing that because I have something to compare my most recent experience against. Usually, this is a warehouse that has got about 35 bays for articulated trucks, and they usually have at least 10 forklifts zooming around. On Tuesday, they had two. Most of the bays were empty. And when I talked to some of the workers, and usually they don't have time to talk, but they said that it had been like that since September. So what we're seeing in terms of this loss of momentum and the inability to rebound and improve upon the rebound that we had at the following that big pullback in December, and that is representative of the weakness that we have in the US economy, at least parts of it. And of course, the parts of it that are hurting most are those that voted for President Trump in the last election. He has a clear incentive to reach a partial deal so that that can be trumpeted to his base, that some of the tariffs that have really fell hardest on that demographic can be eased and let loose animal spirits. Of course, we're going to have to see a push on the upside and new high ground sustained in order to confirm that hypothesis. Now, when we think about what's going on in the UK, it's almost a direct parallel. Of course, it's not the trade war that's being talked about there, but rather Brexit and the UK's relationship with the EU. The pound has been up in very emphatic fashion over the course of the last 2 days. It was up an additional 2 cents in here today. That has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. It is now right in the region of the trend mean against the dollar. When we think about its performance against the euro, it's been in this lengthy base formation, which has been particularly volatile over the course of the last 3 years. It has got all the way back to test the 115 area in just 2 days. That's the upper side of the base formation. I think it is unlikely we're going to see very much upside from here until we have news that a deal has in fact been struck. Well, the Europeans have said that the UK have made some concessions. The only concession that I can think of is that they are willing to now draw the border down the middle of the Irish Sea than around the than between the six counties and the Republic. if there's going to be a referendum, then it's probably going to be in Northern Ireland. And then, considering that Northern Ireland voted with a significant majority to stay within the EU, then they're probably betting that that is probably what people in Northern Ireland still want. Of course, that is going to raise potential for people in Scotland and Wales as well, but that is probably what the deal that the UK is willing to strike encompasses, that they're willing to put it to a vote in Northern Ireland rather than the rest of the UK. And again, this is the kind of fudging that is necessary in order to get a deal through that can pass Parliament. And even that is still a risk. So we've definitely seen some movement in here, and this has been a very clear upward dynamic. We're not going to have clear confirmation of that until a sustained move above 115 is confirmed, but people are voting with their feet. They are willing to bet that this is a meaningful move. The upper dynamic we saw this week for the FTSE 350 index is meaningful. It was up 800 points in here today. When we look at it on a daily chart, it is standing out. There is nobody looking at that chart couldn't say that something important happened today. People are clearly concluding that we are at the end of the Brexit saga, and the UK is trading at a significant discount to its peers in developed markets. Now, the FTSE 250, which is mid-caps, tends to have a higher valuation, but it's at about 17.3 on a forward basis. What I think is most particularly interesting is that when we look at the performance of mid-cap indices globally, then the fact is that the Russell is actually trading at a lower valuation to the FTSE 100, but it has not bounced to the same extent. The MDAX in Germany has a very similar pattern to the FTSE 250, and it is firming from the region of its trend mean as well, although not quite in as dynamic a manner. One of the more impressive moves we've seen has been in the second section index in Japan, and that has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of 2018. And this does generally tend to have rather monochromatic moves when it starts to move. It can rise for weeks on end. So its ability to hold this move above the trend mean is going to be rather key. But I think it is important to look at some very long-term charts when we think about the potential. Japan is like a high beta play on both global growth and the lack of desire for a safe haven. So the Nikkei has been ranging now above the long-term base formation for approximately 2 years. But this continues to look like a first step above the base as long as it is holding that 20,000 level, considering the depth of the bear market and the potential for Japan to offer leverage to speculation on at least a partial deal between the USA and China, then this first step above the base characteristic is rather meaningful. Then when we think about what's going on in terms of Hong Kong, there are obviously major questions that are being asked about China's relationship with it. But when we look at the long term, well, we can see that the Hang Seng has been pretty much ranging above 25,000, which is the upper side of that range that persisted between 2009 and approximately 2017 for 2 years as well. And it is now firming from that 25,000 level. The prospect of the trade war ending is potentially more important than the street protests that continue to rock the area. And people are, I think, willing to think that the valuations on offer there, where you've got a forward PE of 10 and a yield of 3.77, probably suggests that there is some value to be had in that particular index. Of course, when we look at the FTSE and we look at it again on this very long-term basis, we're also presented with a long, and this in this case, a 3-year range above the long-term range. The UK stock market peaked in 1999, and it's been putting in this first step above the base for most of the last 3 years. There is this clear potential that these kinds of markets have the scope to begin to play some form of catch-up with the US markets in the event that we do start to see some risk and perception of risk getting taken off the table. Now let's think about what's going on in terms of the bond market. When we think about just the simple price action, there has been a very consistent trend on the upside over the course of the last 12 months. The pullback we had in September was the largest pullback in at least a year. We now have a lower rally high, and the sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact. We've had two significant days on the downside over at the end of this week. The clearest signal that the lows are in terms of the yield and the highs are in terms of the price, will be when the price comes back below 128.5 and breaks that sequence of higher reaction lows. When we look at the weekly basis, the steepness of the advance we've seen has been really quite incredible. It's also meaningful that despite the fact that yields have been testing lows, we actually have a sequence of lower highs on the longer-term chart for the price. Then when we think about what's going on in terms of the bond market, the simple fact of the matter is that we have governments that are printing bonds like they are going out of fashion. We also have a consensus that has evolved in the equity markets and with regard to the economy that deflation is assured. But that's, I think, going to start getting tested. While the move that we had on stock markets did not hold through the end of the day because there is so much uncertainty about what can happen over a weekend, we did see that the selling pressure held on for most of the session in the bond market. And when we look at the chart, well, we've had a whopping upward dynamic in September. And the 2-day move that we've had in here this week has confirmed support around the 1.5% level. Now, that does suggest that the most likely scenario is that we are going to see a further rally in terms of yields, that the kinds of instruments that did particularly well when the bond prices were rallying and yields contracting are going to do less well. Utilities obviously stand out, and they were really quite overbought, and it is looking increasingly likely that they will at least pull back and fall below the trend mean. We've seen that on each of the occasions when we've had an accelerated move in the utility sector, it has pulled back below the trend mean, which means that there is approximately 100 points of risk on what is an 866-point index. The gold price was steady in terms of the US dollar today because the dollar was weak, and that is allowing it to hold inside of its range. But when we look at it, for example, in pounds, then that does increase the scope that we're going to see a reversion back down towards the mean because of the strength of the pound. There is certainly some risk coming out of the pound right now, and that is likely to pressure gold prices in pounds. However, I think it's unlikely we're going to see gold come back below the £1,100 level. And if it does unwind, fully unwind its overextension relative to the trend mean, that is likely to be a buying opportunity. Now, when we think about the silver price, it does tend to be more volatile than gold, and it was in mildly negative territory today. This also is at risk of a further consolidation, considering the animal spirits that are returning to risk assets. In fact, the fact that the yen and the dollar and gold and treasuries are all pulling back, that is supportive of the view that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the potential for the trade dispute and Brexit to come to some form of resolution. When we think about what is the recession risk, well, obviously, there are shares that have been doing spectacularly well over the course of this entire bull market. Amazon is one of those. It has lost significant momentum over the course of the last 12 months. It is back below the trend mean. It was certainly in positive territory in here today, but it needs to do better than that. And it is quite leveraged to the health of both the corporate sector through its Amazon Web Services business, as well as the consumer. Now, when we think about eBay, that's much more consumer oriented. It needed to bounce from the region of the trend mean, and it at least steadied in there today. Etsy did really very well earlier on in the year because of they have poached some executives from eBay. It pulled back violently, and it is now coming back towards the region of the trend mean. If this is not a completed Type 2 top formation, then it's going to have to push back above the $60 area. The fact that we are seeing some inconsistencies coming through in shares that are really very exposed to the US consumer does suggest that we've had some weakness in the economy. The compression in bond yields is also supporting that view. Where we have some of the clearest evidence of a recession is in Europe. Europe is very much dependent on its export sector, and that is being threatened by the trade war. There does not appear to be news just yet of an easing of the trade war with the USA. At the same time, the Chinese economy is slowing down, so demand for European exports has also been moderating. If, however, we're starting to see the trade war starting to at least pause, then that should be good for Europe. Investors with so much cash on the sidelines are looking for value. They're looking for what to invest in. And the value of the dollar is going to be a significant determinant of what they buy. The dollar index has been down for 2 days. Now, it is still trending higher. It has got this sequence of higher reaction lows. The big question is whether it is going to persist. One of the reasons that people have wanted the dollar is because of positive rates, but also because of its safe haven status, and the economic expansion in the USA has been stronger than in other countries. The news that we've had over the last couple of days doesn't particularly change that rationale, but rather people will start to be thinking about value and whether there is scope for further outperformance if the dollar stops appreciating, and that should start to help emerging markets. When we do think about some of those emerging markets, well, obviously we did look at China via Hong Kong, and the A-share index is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. India has got some of unique challenges in terms of its shadow banking sector and the collapse that we've seen in some of the shadow bank lenders and, of course, the banks that lend to those lenders. But the Nifty index posted an upside key reversal on Wednesday, and it is still holding the region of the trend mean. Some of the shares that have experienced some of the biggest declines, like Yes Bank, are at least beginning to give some evidence of support coming through, but they need capital, and it is the capital allocation and their ability to attract that kind of capital is going to be the big arbiter of when these downtrends eventually stop. There is a significant number of the housing finance companies have also continued to trend downwards. The chances are that there will be some bankruptcies as a result of this crisis. D1 Finance, for example, is down very significantly. It's well in excess of 90% on the downside, and yet it is not yet stopping. When we look at, for example, India Bulls, that had been holding out better, but then it also broke on the downside. This is a clear indication that we are in a rather interesting environment for India. They've already announced that there's going to be a consolidation of the state-owned banks. They've already cut corporate taxes. Now, both of those measures are aimed at insulating the broad economy from the pressure that is coming to bear on the shadow banking sector. There is no real evidence yet that the shadow banking sector sell-off has ended. Eventually, there will probably need to be a bad bank set up, but we're just not there yet. When, for example, we look at Tata Motors, and that is also listed in the USA, we can see another example of a share that has pulled back extraordinarily violently. But here we're starting to see some evidence of support coming through. If some of the pressures on the global economy start to moderate, then that should be good for global consumer demand. The automotive sector has been one that has been selling off most aggressively because of the twin threats of lower demand and the threat of technological innovation. When I think about what the potential is here, we already know that a lot of the performance that has occurred over the course of the last year has been because of valuation expansion. And valuation expansion has been a significant factor in the performance of stocks over much of the last 5 years. Corporate profits are due to get updated at the end of this month. This is not an index that gets updated all that often. It's quarterly in arrears. But the more important point is that when we get peaks in the data, then it does tend to be a lead indicator for future recessions. The value peaked in 1997 and it peaked in 2006. We had a significant peak in 2014. That was part of the reason why people were worried in 2015 and 16 that things were really starting to look ropey. Since then, we've had a very meaningful advance in the stock market, and the measure did pop higher. Expectations for earnings in the third quarter of this year are really not very enthusiastic. But the more important point is that if this were to break below 2000, then the only thing that would be sustaining a bullish environment on stocks would be valuation expansion. Valuation expansion alone is not something that can sustain a market indefinitely, and it does require then a bubbly environment in order to really get to higher levels. There is the potential that this market is eventually going to end in a bubble. I think arguably we already have a bubble in the bond market. When we look at the performance of treasuries on a total return basis, it has done nothing but trend higher for over 30 years. And the index was only started in 1981. Since then, it did look like there was a major loss of momentum between 2014 and about 2018, and then we had this pop on the upside. I think it's quite likely that this might be the last hurrah, but we certainly don't have evidence of that yet. We're going to have to see a sustained move back above 3% in order to really break out of this base formation. And that is a doubling of the yield from where it was last week. I think that the yield is at least going to get back up towards 3%. If we have to start playing forward and thinking about how is all of this going to play out, then if the central bank is cutting interest rates and the government is running a 4% fiscal deficit, and central banks the world over are cutting interest rates, and global liquidity is getting a tailwind because of the weakening dollar. Well, that is the kind of environment which will create a bubble. We have seen a meaningful pop on the upside in terms of the total value of assets sitting on central bank balance sheets because of the weakness of the dollar. And in addition to that, the fact that the Federal Reserve has had to add in over $100 billion worth of liquidity to the repo market is also a source of additional liquidity. And there is the real potential that the Federal Reserve is going to have to do more. There are predictable periods of time when the repo market tends to tighten up around the end of the quarter and the end of the year. And because of the changes we've had in regulation, which has resulted in the absence of prop traders taking the other side of the trade in the repo market and the requirement on banks to hold more tier one capital, then that has removed liquidity from the market. It has actually made the markets more fragile. What I find particularly interesting is that there was an interview I saw, I think it was yesterday or the day before. It was some with somebody with a double or triple barreled Spanish name that I'm not going to try and repeat, but he's basically a former Cornell University professor who has consulted and worked at a number of hedge funds that are trying to develop machine learning in terms of picking stocks and following trends in the markets. And what I find particularly interesting is this assumption that the machinations of the crowd can be subsumed by machine learning. If anything, this hubris is just another example of how financial innovation eventually creates a bubble and then a crash. The one thing we see at the end of every major bull market is that you get earnings agnostic investment. Now, whether that is quant or whether it is passive in nature and ETFs or whether it is simply following the index, all of these strategies do not pay attention to valuations. The popularity of stock picking and looking at the clear value that is represented by a dividend discount model, that's very unfashionable right now. That kind of investing doesn't become fashionable again until after a crash. The quantity of money that is being managed now by passive strategies is more than half of all the funds committed to management, or to half of all the funds under management are committed to passive strategies, probably a more correct way of saying it. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the global economy, we're presented with an environment where it's been incredibly liquidity rich for over a decade. There is the very real possibility that some of the most high-profile machine learning and quantitative strategists are mistaking a bull market for brains. And that is something we will not know until there is, in fact, a major pullback. Of course, then if you're committing all of the money that you have to algorithmic strategies, then eventually they're going to all conclude at the same time that they need to be short. And then that is going to create volatility. So I don't think that that is a pressing decision today, but it is something that is likely to form the basis of a problem in future. If we play forward that simply think about what's going on in the political environment and what's going on in the economic environment, well, we know there's going to be a U.S. presidential election in November of next year. The U.S. presidential cycle generally expects that in the second half of the third year you get a pop on the upside, and that can persist through into the fourth year. Well, in this environment, that is supportive of the bubble hypothesis, that we are going to get a very meaningful breakout. And it's quite likely that we do get a breakout because the volatility of the market has been so inert. When we look at the contraction in the volatility of the S&P 500 over the course of the last 6 months, the pullbacks have got smaller, the highs have been sustained. What the failure to sustain moves above 3,000 tells us is that there is at least not yet, we haven't yet seen a vacuum of supply form above the range. The higher reaction lows tells us that there is demand coming through, but we also know that the longer a range persists, the more boring it gets, the more impatient investors get, and they do introduce stops. And people tend to put their stops below the most recent low. So there are definitely going to be some stops around the 2850 level, there are going to be more stops around the 2800 level, and there are going to be more stops around the 2700 level. And then there are probably going to be big stops around the 2300 level. So we need to see that the index can hold this move put in over the last 2 weeks and then improve upon it and sustain the move above the 3000 level. The longer the range persists, the greater the likelihood is that there is going to be a breakout. If the break is on the upside, it is likely to be both surprising and emphatic. If the break is on the downside, it is likely to be both surprising and emphatic. When we think about the long-term prognosis, then that five-year moving average would be, I think, one of the big touchstones for any long-term unleveraged investor. For shorter-term traders, they're obviously going to have a much shorter time horizon and going to be looking more at the ability of the market to push through that 3,000 level. One thing that we are seeing is that the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index has pushed through and is within a very close proximity of its peak. It's been consolidating for most of this year above the range put in 2018. We're still not yet at the point where the breakout has occurred. I do think it is likely we're going to get there. When we get to the election next year, there is going to be a great deal of uncertainty. It's, I think, quite likely that Bernie Sanders is going to have to drop out of the Democratic race. He's suffered a heart attack. There are going to be questions among the vast majority of voters whether he has the stamina to really fulfill the role of president. Most of his votes are probably going to go to Elizabeth Warren. Then when we think about Joe Biden's chances, well, it doesn't really look like he's going to be the one to win the nomination. But of course, we're still in early days, and it is not decided until it's decided. We do know that President Trump is going to do whatever he can to support the economy. That is, I think, the basis for the view that we are going to get a break on the upside. And we could get a significant rally for 12 months. At that point, then, if he is re-elected, well, he will have a free rein to re-engage the trade war with China to fulfill his election promises. If Elizabeth Warren wins the election, then investors are going to take fright, and we are quite likely to have a significant sell-off. And that's even if she tacks towards the center. Well, what that suggests is that there is the clear potential we're going to get a significant pop on the upside, but that politics could intervene to arrest the advance. And then, of course, we have the potential that if we do get economic figures doing better, if we do get the market popping on the upside, the Federal Reserve is quite likely to stop cutting interest rates. The one thing that popped up in the minutes of their last discussion was that they are wondering about when they can stop. And if we go back and think about what Jay Powell was saying at one of the most recent meetings, it was that they think of this as a mid-cycle cutting phase. Well, that means that they want to start raising rates again. It's if the Fed starts to raise rates again, then that is going to start putting pressure on the leveraged bets. The one thing that we certainly know is that the risks are in the bond market, and by extension, they're in the private equity market. The failure of a number of IPOs, the shaving of valuations to more reasonable levels, the fact that we've had a number of fund managers already experiencing problems with illiquid assets, that 6 out of 10 of the major fund providers now own private assets, and the fact that the major private equity companies are raising cash, but that retail investors are committing more money to peer-to-peer lending and to trying to get in on the first floor of private companies, well, that is obviously very reminiscent of bubbly activity. At the same time, the extremely big move we've had in gold, well, it is consolidating, but it does look like we are back in a bull market environment. The fact is that regardless of the good news that we're getting right now, the longer-term outlook is that governments are going to be borrowing more money, and that is going to depress the purchasing power of currencies, and then its fixed assets are likely to be a clear beneficiary from that trend, and gold is obviously one of the easiest to invest in and one of the most liquid markets as well. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.